Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
I don't know any other way to describe this than that if you look at the radar, the Gulf of Mexico has a really bad case of the measles. It just, there's like hundreds of little teeny tiny pop-up showers everywhere from the big Bend area of Florida all the way over to Texas, all over the water. And it just looks like, you know, chicken pox on the Gulf. So, I don't know. Anyway, Julio Diaz, he is the host of the Let's Go, which is a program you can hear on Saturdays here at 4 o'clock on News Radio. Also the host of the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So, this week, Honey Don't is the big one. Is that right?
Big one may be a stretch. It's kind of a slow week. So, there's only a couple, like, smaller films, either independent films or more art housey kind of fare this week. Honey Don't is the latest movie from Ethan Coen,
okay,
of the Coen brothers. For some reason, they have, like, in the last few years, just been working separately. And it seems like, you know how, like, if you're a Coen brothers fan and I am, they kind of would seem to, there'd be a regular cycle with them where they
right.
do a comedic movie and then they do a dramatic movie and then they do a comedic movie. And it seems like Joel Coen was the one that was the driving force behind all the dramatic stuff, and Ethan was the force behind the comedic stuff, because as they've worked separately, Joel's been doing, more dramatic stuff, like he did the Shakespeare adaptation a couple of years ago with his wife and Denzel Washington and things like that. And Ethan Coen's been doing these kind of lighter, comedic type stuff.
Okay.
So this is Ethan again. And this is a detective story with Margaret Qualley playing a private eye. He's, kind of this, like prototypical, like noirish private eye, but, female.
Okay.
And she's, tough as nails, never met her match until she comes up against this cop played by Aubrey Plaza in this movie.
I'm excited. I'm a big fan of Aubrey Plaza. Chris Evans is in this as well. So, and I mean, anything, even the diciness of the Coen brothers on separate, productions. What's it showing up as? How do you think?
Yeah, I like everybody in this, but for some reason, like, the critics have been really down on Ethan's solo movies. Like, Joel's solo movies have done okay with the critics, but Ethan's have fared less well. 58% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
No, not great. Okay.
I kind of feel like some of this is just
petty personal stuff.
I don't know what it is.
Okay.
The last movie that Ethan did by himself, which also starred Margaret Qualley, Driveaway Dolls, kind of met the same fate.
Relay is another one that's out. This is more of an action movie with Lily James.
Yeah,
love her.
I'm a big fan of Lily James. I would pretty much watch her read the phone book, so I'm very interested in this movie. And I do have a friend that saw it last night and said that he really enjoyed it, that it was like a good, he put it as like a lazy Sunday afternoon thriller.
Okay.
Like something that'll probably want, in a few years will air regularly on the vastly dwindling whatever is left of basic cable and that sort of thing. And that, kind of an enjoyable diversion kind of movie.
It's going to show up on the 50 Cent channel.
I still can't
believe 50 Cent has a cable channel. It's so crazy. Anyway,
basically, that's kind of what I think it stars has become, if I remember.
Yeah, right.
He's got all those shows on there. Apparently, very enjoyable, not anything that's going to be like a long standing, people are going to love this
classic
movie for years and years, but pleasant thriller.
And then last one is Trust.
And decent reviews.
Oh, okay, good.
Trust, not screened for critics. This stars Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones as a Hollywood starlet, typecasting. And she is trying to get away from it all, and she ends up in this remote cabin being stalked by this guy, and because there's nowhere to run, and not reviewed for critics.
I gotcha. All right, fair enough. What are you guys going to watch next week, Julio?
Not sure just yet, but make sure you check out our Facebook group. When we figure something out, it will be up there.
Excellent. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturday here on News Radio and also the Pensacola Movie Club, where you watch movies and talk about them. Julio, great to talk with you again. Sorry we missed you last week. That was my fault. But thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
8:14 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Find out next why Woke Andrew, Brother Andrew, is in favor of the new rebranding of Cracker Barrel. Amazingly, yeah. I mean, Brother Andrew sometimes gets things wrong. Anyway, also, be sure to check out newsradio923.com and fill out our listener advisory board. That's a quick survey. It takes you less than 5 minutes, and you can tell us what you think about our programming. Very important to us to get your feedback on all of those things. Also, the Wine a Little, Dine a Lot Wine Pairing Gala, benefiting Capstone Adaptive Learning Therapy Center. That is tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be great. Find out more at catcountry987.com. And John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. No new accidents to let you know about. Good news on that. Looks like I-10, I-110 are back to flowing smoothly. Still seeing some delays on Davis Highway southbound as you approach Olive Road. Let's see here. Other than that, we're looking good. I'm not seeing any other delays to let you know about. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Bands on the Beach is presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority and happens every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. You're invited to bring a blanket, a lawn chair, and relax and watch the sunset and enjoy your favorite bands. This week, it's Shenanigans. They're not just a band, it's an experience. It's definitely not a show you just go to, it's a show you participate in. So don't miss Shenanigans this Tuesday night at 7 at Bands on the Beach. You'll be dancing and singing along. Just remember, no pets or glass allowed.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stefan? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Blackley throws it up near sideline towards the end.
Yeah!
Four-man rush, Mendoza stepping up, he goes down!
House call! Touchdown Florida State! Touchdown FSU!
Florida State football opens the 2025 season on August 30th by hosting Alabama in an early season ACC-SEC matchup.
FSU versus Alabama, Saturday at 12:30 p.m. on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Like what you hear?
Give us your feedback by filling out our News Radio Listener Advisory Board survey. Just go to our website, newsradio923.com, and fill it out.
Simple.
News Radio 92.3.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the old Cracker Barrel logo. After this week's unveiling of the new and improved logo, which is both more visually clean and aesthetically simplified. For those of you who have never had authentic imitation Southern food like chicken fried steak or chicken and dumplings served with a side dish of collard greens and a game of oversized checkers, the original logo featured an elderly man in overalls reclining on a wooden chair, leaning casually against a large wooden barrel with the words Cracker Barrel in brown script inside a bean-shaped ellipsoid with the phrase Old Country Store beneath. The new logo has only the words Cracker Barrel in black simplified script inside a yellow hexagon with rounded corners, and we don't like it. We love it. First of all, we, the members of the First United Church of Wokenism, always love any decision which separates people from the comfortable traditions of the past and imposes upon them newer, uglier, less interesting icons. Separating people from the forms they're accustomed to is one of our key methods for destroying the continuity of culture. This is very similar to the move away from classical types of architecture with their intricacy, meaning, character, and aesthetic complexity toward our wokenist architecture, or what some people have lovingly called brutalism, whose only goals are simplicity, functionality, and making you feel like you just ate wheatgrass with your eyes. But if you really want to know whether this was a good move or not, just consider who is upset about it. The same people criticizing this splendidly mundane redesign are the same ones who wanted to keep, and pardon me for saying these hurtful words to you, Aunt Jemima, the Land O'Lakes squaw, and the Washington Redskins logo. Well, if those people hate it, we extra doublethink love it. But just consider what else this new logo accomplishes. They've erased the old man, Uncle Herschel. That means Cracker Barrel is now gender inclusive. They've erased the barrel, a confusing image from a bygone era that probably only made Gen Z kids wonder what life was all about. And they've dropped the slogan Old Country Store, which did nothing but make non-old people feel uncomfortable and gave the impression that rural values are better than urban values, which we all know is just code for white supremacy culture. But speaking of white supremacy culture, as we so often do, are they seriously still going to call it Cracker Barrel? This is the only thing they really got wrong. Going with the black script, excellent anti-racism. Ditching the vestiges of the overalls-clad patriarchy, nice work. But why didn't you complete the conversion to inoffensiveness by simply calling it the barrel for all people? The only thing left to eliminate would be that awful ableist peg game that only serves to make people feel bad about themselves when they can't solve it. Yes, we love the new logo, which is the pinnacle of blandness. It's as flavor-free as the gravy always was. It's a perfect complement to the interior decor redesign, which transforms the old lattice and antiques look into a modern, inoffensive, cream-colored cafeteria style, finally jettisoning all those terrible reminders of a former United States in which the self-reliant farmer wore snowshoes, trapped game, cooked on a cast-iron skillet, used primitive tools to build his own house, and owned livestock. Have you ever thought about just how much of the old decor was either offensive or dangerous? Children invited to play games at an open fireplace? Mounted deer trophies? Rusty saw blades with no safety case or warning label? Dangerous kerosene lamps right on the table? And random guns mounted over the hearth? No, none of this was good. We want people to forget they were ever strong, independent country folk, capable of handling their own problems and growing their own produce, and we certainly don't want to remind them of a time when they were not dependent on government and their phones for virtually everything in their lives. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, Governor Ron DeSantis and the Florida Department of Transportation for removing rainbow street art from crosswalks in Orlando, including outside the Pulse nightclub, and for telling other municipalities they have to do the same by September 3rd.
And we've just discovered that the Florida Department of Transportation, in the middle of the night, ripped the rainbow colors off of this city crosswalk. They illegally vandalized city property.
This all follows a June 30th memo from FDOT to local governments warning them that if they don't remove all non-standard traffic control and street markings, they risk losing state infrastructure funding.
I cannot believe that the DeSantis administration has engaged in this hostile act against the city of Orlando.
The letter specifically warned local governments against having any surface art that is associated with social, political, or ideological messages or images and does not serve the purposes of traffic control. This would include non-message-driven art, creative bike lane markings, and all manner of interesting street murals, including even the now-faded Black Lives Matter mural on A Street in Pensacola. Now, I'll be honest here. We find ourselves a little conflicted on this subject. On the one hand, we know it's evil because DeSantis likes it. That much is easy. Of course, it's also obviously an effort to silence and remarginalize all people of the holy acronym string and all people of color. Of course, I mean brown and black, not red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Certainly, if state police were removing images of the American flag, the military, or some other patriotic or conservative content, we'd be thrilled by it. But on the other hand, the stated reason for this blackwashing of our streets is public safety due to the less reliable road surface, visual distractions for drivers, and information that can confuse autonomous vehicles whose safe operation depends on standardized street markings. And we surely do believe that if something saves even just one life, especially those most cherished of human lives, the pedestrian and the urban non-motorized bicyclist, then it's worth doing. Nevertheless, we are adamantly on the side of those who want to retain the glorious celebration of alternative lifestyles and minority rights which are represented so prominently across Florida in these colorful streetscapes. Whose streets? Our streets. Whose crosswalks? Gay crosswalks. Nuff said. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, we want to recognize the fantastic woke being done in Great Britain by awarding the UK this week's floating tambourine of terrificness with five hemp tassels and a single cowbell. This award has been earned most specifically by the brilliant policing done at Dalton in Furness during a protest outside the construction site of a proposed mosque. Among the other relatively unnoteworthy messages being chanted, one man uttered what can only be described as possibly the most blood-curdling, most threatening, most vile and chilling comment this theologian has ever been forced to experience. Now keep in mind, I'm only sharing this with you so you can understand the swift police action to remove this man in handcuffs from the protest before things spiraled out of control. I want you to be sure that you're ready before we proceed. Brace yourselves. This is strong stuff. Yes, this filthy, disgusting excuse for a Briton actually said out loud in a sing-song voice, "We love bacon." I know, I'm sorry. It was probably a bad idea for me to even play that horrid, wicked, vile commentary. Certainly you can see why the police had to arrest the man immediately. After all, no person standing outside a proposed site of Islamic worship, Allah be praised, should have to endure such obscene filth. But this is only one incident in a much larger context that we want to extra celebrate. England has been working on a law called the Employment Rights Bill, which recently passed second reading in the House of Lords, that would make it illegal for an employer to allow their employees to endure harassment by anyone, including customers. This brilliant bill actually makes it a crime for a pub owner to knowingly stand by and allow a customer to say anything within earshot of a bartender or server which that employee finds offensive, even if it's not directed at the employee, and that includes jokes and jests. In other words, employers are now responsible for making sure their employees never encounter any speech which hurts their feelings or offends them while at the workplace, clearly setting the bar for punishable speech at the level of whatever bothers someone else. And what could bother, say, a Muslim construction worker more than hearing some contemptible bully sing out his personal affection for consuming cured non-halal meats? We see you, Britain. We celebrate you, Britain, and we adore the way you are raising up a whole generation of citizens whose most highly refined skill is the artful talent for finding things to take offense at. We cherish the idea of a future in which personal woundedness can finally become the ultimate differentiator between acceptable and unacceptable speech acts. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
You know, it's literally true. They FDOT came in overnight and repainted the Orlando Pulse nightclub crosswalk black in the color there. And what's funny, too, and that was Carlos Guillermo Smith, a famously gay Democrat in the Senate, who was protesting, you know, upset about it. Anna Escamani also did a video about it. She was upset about it. But locals have shown up with colored chalk to color back in the colors over the black. Anyway, John Pickens has got... I don't make any of this stuff up. I mean, I exaggerate, but this is one where I didn't even have to exaggerate.
Wow.
The I love bacon, or we love bacon. That's real. That really happened. Because, you know, bacon and pig stuff is... Anyway, with the Muslims. Anyway, John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
Now you're making me want some bacon.
Well,
thanks.
Don't we
I
all.
Appreciate it. Yeah. All right. Brought to you by Anderson Subaru. No new accidents to let you know about right now. I-10 is looking good again. I-110 is actually flowing smoothly. Not seeing any delays this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning. Hurricane Aaron continuing to move away from the U.S., but dangerous waves and rip currents still a bit of a concern on the eastern seaboard today. It's forecast to head south of Atlantic Canada later today and on Saturday. The FBI carrying out a raid this morning at the Maryland home of President Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton. That raid confirmed by FBI Director Kash Patel. He posted on X, quote, "No one is above the law."
Very unusual for an FBI director to sort of make a statement like that, that some would describe as grandstanding about a situation like this right now without better detailing what it is.
And that's NBC's Peter Alexander. Sources say that agents are looking for classified records in that raid.
I just think you need to be nicer to Uncle Pecos. John Bolton has a mustache so epic only a Tom and Jerry cartoon could represent it.
Exactly.
Do you guys remember the old...
Oh, I do.
Yeah, Ronald Corden, he did dry. Rambo, bling, breaks the... All right, go ahead, David. Sorry for being old. I'm sorry.
And Lyle Menendez scheduled to appear before a California parole board today. 3 months ago, Lyle and his brother Eric were resentenced to 50 years to life for the murders of their parents in 1989. Eric Menendez was denied parole yesterday. He'll be able to seek that again in 3 years.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update.
Froggy went a-courtin', he did ride a-crambo.
He did a pretty good impression of
Thank
it,
you.
Too.
I mean, my brain is so saturated with pop culture from the 70s and 80s and the 90s and the aughts and the 10s. And, look, I love my wife dearly. You know, 28 years in, we just had an anniversary. But I said to her yesterday, I said, you know what I would love? I would love to actually have a record of all the movies that I've ever seen and how many times I've seen each one, partially so I could avoid rewatching the ones that I don't remember that were bad the first time. But she said, but wouldn't that be embarrassing for you to have evidence of how many hours?
Oh, boy.
How dare you?
Oh, boy.
Yes, but how dare you?
I'm Gianna Gelosi. FBI agents raiding the D.C. area home of President Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton.
We believe John Bolton was home. We're told that he is not in custody and he's not under arrest. The FBI not commenting, the Justice Department not commenting, but two senior government sources say that FBI agents are looking specifically for classified documents.
That's Fox's David Spunt. Now, the ex-Trump advisor has been at odds with his old boss. His security protections were stripped in January. And it's Friday, and if you're heading to the beaches on the East Coast this weekend, Hurricane Erin is making its presence known.
Wave heights anywhere from 5 to 9 feet continue to bring dangerous conditions. Beaches closed to swimmers because of a high risk of rip currents.
That's Fox Weather's Shane Menard at the Jersey Shore. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. 79 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies and a beautiful Friday morning here across the area. A 23-year-old man facing charges for allegedly abusing two children as he was working as a nanny. The two kids are both nonverbal and under 5 years old. Police say both kids had extensive injuries consistent with blunt force trauma. Diamond L. Bailey was arrested and charged with two counts of aggravated child abuse yesterday. He's being held in the Santa Rosa County Jail on $5,000 bond. Over 400 kids on the wait list currently for the school readiness program in Escambia County. It's due to a shortage of qualified child care workers. The Early Learning Coalition says providers are operating at about 70% capacity.
For every dollar you put into preschool or early learning, you're saving anywhere from $7 to $16 in cost to society to either mitigate the fact they didn't get the learning and they're not ready to be adults, or they get into drugs, they get into crime, all the social services that have to be spent on. We can save that money if we spend the dollar today. We don't pay $7 to $16 tomorrow.
Program Director Bruce Watson, and he says many families are now hesitant to even apply for the program due to the funding issues. He says the high demand, low wages, and employee turnover are the biggest issues they're facing. And he says he doesn't believe that that situation is likely to improve anytime soon. Florida State Senator Joe Gruter is expected to be named the chair of the Republican National Committee today. He is running for the seat being vacated by Michael Whatley unopposed. Republicans say it shows how important Florida has become on a national level.
We're identifying quality candidates. They're being supported. We have a streamlined message. And most of all, we have continuity.
Tony Figueroa from the Young Republicans, Whatley vacating that seat to run for a U.S. Senate seat. Senator Rick Scott accusing China of turning its fishing practices into a weapon. Scott and Alabama Republican Senator Katie Britt sent a letter yesterday to Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. They asked him to address China's illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Scott and Britt say China is the world's leader in illegally harvesting wild-caught fish, and they say that undermines U.S. workers, threatens national security, and devastates the environment. Well, police in Clearwater say they're continuing the investigation into the death of Hulk Hogan. They say that no body cam or 911 footage can be released until that investigation is over. Detectives say they've now interviewed witnesses and they're seeking medical records. Police say Hogan's family has been supportive in the case. This follows comments by his daughter, Brooke, on Wednesday, that she's gotten tips that the footage could shed light on the case and change the narrative. The Space Force X-37B space plane has been launched into low Earth orbit. The robotic plane lifted off late on Thursday from the Kennedy Space Center on top of a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. The Space Force not offering any details about the mission. SpaceX ended its webcast to that launch shortly after the booster rocket returned to Earth. The 29-foot X-37B, called the Orbital Test Vehicle, it includes classified technology. Last month, the Space Force said payloads will include next-generation technologies like laser communications and quantum inertial sensors. 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are back flowing smoothly. See some minor delays on Highway 90 as you approach, Highway 90 southbound as you're heading toward Pensacola. But other than that, we're looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And now our Channel 3 forecast.
We are going to be seeing a lovely day today with a high near 90 degrees, 40% chance of a stray shower or thunderstorm. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 75. For Saturday, 50% chance of rain, high near 89. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Going into Sunday, 50% chance of rain, high near 89 degrees and a low near 75. This is Brooke Richardson for the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. We've got 80 degrees right now. Your next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3. And your money now this morning. Markets are up at the opening bell. The Dow's up 264 points at 45.49.27. S&P 500 up 21.5 points, 63.91.41. NASDAQ up 27 points at 21.129.611. 10-year bond rate down at 4.306% today. Gold price is down $11.70 at $33.69.90. Silver down 21 cents at $37.87. Looking into the crypto market, Bitcoin down about 200 this morning at $111.993. Ethereum's up $24.50. Solana down a couple bucks. Dogecoin down about a half of a cent this morning. XRP down by just over a nickel. Thousands of Boeing workers are still on the picket lines as their strike has reached the end of week three. Union members say the company needs to make a better offer if they want them back on the job. The strike gained support yesterday from the international president of the Machinists Union and the Missouri Democrat Congressman Wesley Bell. The Trump administration can move forward with putting hundreds of millions of dollars in National Institutes of Health grants linked to diversity initiatives after a Supreme Court ruling Thursday.
A 5-4 decision in part reversed a lower court ruling that canceling the funds was illegal. Five of the court's conservative justices ruled in favor of the administration, accusing the lower court of defying an earlier Supreme Court ruling that allowed the administration to cancel grants. Chief Justice John Roberts joined the liberal justices in opposition. I'm Michael Kastner.
Investors will be watching for any clues on interest rates as Fed Chairman Jerome Powell delivers remarks today at the Jackson Hole Economic Symposium. Powell's speech will no doubt be dissected for any hints on possible interest rate cuts. The Fed meets again in September. Many economists are expecting a cut then. 8:38, our next news at 9, and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
To the hip, the hip, hop, you don't stop. Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's an opportunity to talk about news of the week or topics of interest with a couple of friends here in studio. A little bit different feel from a lot of the other stuff that we do. Today, I have a, this is kind of, I'm excited about this. This is going to be fun. I'm outnumbered. It's, which means it's going to be interesting. We have Christian Wagley here, who you might know as executive director of Healthy Golf.
No. But Bike Pensacola.
Of Bike Pensacola, which is, you know, mobility and alternative to traffic. And that's primarily what we're going to talk about today. And then first time participant, we have Chris Phillips, who I'd never met in person. You and I have talked how many times on the phone and by text? You know, hundreds. Yeah. I don't even know. But Chris Phillips used to be the engineer and used to work in code enforcement in Santa Rosa County. Then he moved over to Escambia County. He was the traffic engineer?
Director of the traffic department.
Yeah. Okay. So all of your complaints, you can text me now, 437-1620. And he's left the county now and he has a different employment. But so glad you're able to come in, Chris, by the way. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Glad for having me.
So let's talk traffic stuff today. Roads and bikes and speed limits and that kind of stuff. And I'm going to start with my – we had a conversation about this earlier in the week. I know people probably thought that I was being tongue-in-cheek maybe or sarcastic, but I wasn't. I'm genuinely raising this question. Why do we have speed limits? Hear me out. It's an 85% rule, right? The speed limit is set – supposed to be set at the speed below which 85% of the people will drive. So you look for the 15th, you know, fastest car, you round up to 5 and then you set the speed limit. That's kind of the theory of it. My argument, and which is kind of fits with that, is why do we need to tell people what speed to drive? Aren't people capable of deciding what's safe for themselves? I drive. I know this road's too slow. I know this road's too fast. I know that traffic is going aggressive, whatever. I make judgments all the time about what my car can and cannot do. I may get it wrong. People do get it wrong. But seriously, why do we have to tell people when we trust them to make the judgment about getting in a car and operating on a road safely? If we can't trust them to know what speed to drive, should we be trusting them to drive at all? Serious question. So I'll start with, I don't know, Christian, you want to weigh in on?
I mean, the obvious answer is from an enforcement standpoint, right? I mean, it's clearly unsafe. You know that. You even said it. You feel yourself, if you're driving too fast, you know that's unsafe. You shouldn't do it. And most people will self-regulate, right? But there's a few that won't. Why do we have a law? Why is it illegal to kill people? We know it's wrong. The Bible says it's wrong. It violates our moral, it violates everything. But we still have to have a law that says that so that we can enforce on someone when they do that. And I think from the enforcement standpoint, you have to set that limit somewhere, which, by the way, that limit is determined by the – where that limit should be is really determined by the design of the road. Speed limits – people drive based on the design of the road, and the profession, Chris's profession, is finally acknowledging that now. Why can you drive 15 miles an hour over the speed limit? Because of the design. And if you want people to go slower, you don't change the speed limit. You change the maybe you do, but you have to change the design of the road.
But that's kind of exactly my point, though, is, I mean, Three Mile Bridge is a perfect case of this, right? That is a 45 mile an hour speed limit on a 70 mile an hour bridge. And that's why nobody drives 45 except when the cops are out or when they're afraid. People drive 70 or 80 because that's the I-10 bridge. It's the same bridge. Skanska built both bridges. It's the same bridge, and everybody knows it. As you say, it's built for 80. Why do they try to make them drive 45? Well, we get problems, and then you get, you know, varying speeds. Varying speeds are their own problem. When people are artificially, me, in the right lane trying to not get a ticket, drive 45 or 50, people are passing me doing 70. That's unsafe because I'm artificially going slow. Chris, the argument for speed limits?
Well, I think you have to look at many factors. You mentioned the 85th percentile factor, and that's a good starting point. But you also have to look at the surrounding area. Using a street, for example, a street and a road are not the same thing. A road is typically straight, wide, and people feel comfortable going at or just above the speed limit on a road. But a street, you have to take into many other factors. You have to take in the pedestrians on the street, if there's on-street parking or so forth. So if you looked at just strictly the 85th percentile everywhere, your speed limits are probably not going to reflect the true measure of safety that the citizens and the people that use those particular facilities are looking for. And there are standards. For years and years, I had people ask, why is Avalon Boulevard only 45 miles
an hour? Oh, my God, Avalon Boulevard.
Well, the
yes.
The state in the Florida Green Book, which is the geometric design standards for the state, have dictated that through many studies that if there is a curb and gutter, which is a urban section, a curb and gutter type road, mm-hmm. the maximum speed limit in the state is 45 miles an hour. In order to be able to fit that road through that corridor, when they four-laned it, they had to use the curb and gutter section because it's a tighter section to be able to not disturb as many wetlands and not have to pay for as much right-of-way when they built the road. So hence that 45-mile-an-hour speed limit. Now, all of us that use it daily or weekly or however often you use it, you know that you can comfortably go 50 or 55 through there.
And you also, I would argue more than that. Well, you can comfortably go 60 on Avalon. I mean, if there's not a lot of traffic, you can go 70 on Avalon if you're willing. I mean, sure.
But the flip side of that is you have to look for that FHP car sitting in the median.
That's right.
And that's the X factor. I mean, that's the part.
But that's only because they're enforcing an artificially low limit on the rate of travel.
Correct. And that becomes a problem for them as well. I mean, right. I've looked at many roads in the area. Throughout Escambia and Santa Rosa County, and citizens would ask, why is this speed limit here 45? Well, we do the study. We find that most people do 45, and it's safe enough to do 45. And if you have three people that want it 25, but 85% of the people are doing the speed limit or just above, you're not going to artificially lower that speed limit. However, sometimes, again, the standards and the public outcry do dictate where you massage that final number.
And I would say, you know, we notice bad speed limits when they're wrong.
Of course.
And we don't as much, human nature, notice speed limits that are right. A great example of this, one of my favorite roads in Pensacola. I don't have many, but I do have one. It's Creighton Road. Mm-hmm. Creighton Road between Davis and 9th Avenue, 45 miles an hour is my favorite road. It's uncongested. It's wide. It's fast. It's the easiest way to get around town. It is the only road of its type that I know of in this whole area where you can literally say, honestly, that road's probably bigger than it needs to be, but thank God it is because it's a great road to drive on at 45 miles an hour. Every other road where you notice it, like Burgess 35, nobody drives 35, but that's a little tiny two-lane road with, you know, neighborhoods and all this kind of stuff. It's dangerous to go faster, but everybody does. And, you know, that's kind of the example is you notice it when it's bad. You notice the three-mile bridge when it's 45. Nobody really – you don't complain about the 70 on I-10 because you think 70 feels about right. You know, 80 feels about right sometimes. So, anyway, we'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're on Highway 29 and West Roberts Road, we've got an accident there that just happened. It's off to the side of the road, but I'm seeing some minor delays both northbound and southbound on Highway 29. Other than that, we look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. I got Chris Phillips and Christian Wagley here with me. We're talking about, they're both experts in traffic and travel and transportation. That's why I love having them with me. We can kind of nerd out on some of this stuff. Christian, when we were talking before we came on the air, you were talking about a term that I had not heard of before, but I love the idea, induced demand. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, there's finally, after decades of this really coming to pass and being true, the traffic engineering departments and transportation departments are finally acknowledging that, you know, we always thought the solution was to add more lanes when a roadway was congested. But while that roadway is congested,
like Highway 90 in Milton, for example.
Yeah, but during those years that roadway is congested, people are avoiding, people change their behavior. Humans change their behavior. They avoid going out there when it's busy. They defer that trip to another time. They change their behavior. Once that new lane is added, boom, that limit is gone. They're back out on that road again, and the new capacity from that new lane is immediately filled back up again, and then you're right back where you started again. And so the more lanes you add, the more you literally induce and pull people out in their cars to drive more, and you just can never ultimately fix it that way. You have to look more multimodal and more broad than just simply adding lanes.
But, I mean, doesn't that serve to benefit the system overall, though, because you've now reabsorbed some of the side street traffic? You know, I think of like US 29 just got widened, right? We widened Highway 29 to 53 lanes or whatever it is now. What is it? It's 8 or 10 or I can't even remember. But as a result, people take that instead of Palafox, take that instead of maybe Chemstrand, arguably would have before. And so that actually alleviates traffic problems on some of the other streets. That's not a benefit, or it doesn't work out that way?
Well, I mean, I think there may be some, you know, benefits from added capacity at certain levels, going from two lanes to four. But I mean, the idea that you're going to fix it by continuing to add lanes just simply doesn't work. You're going to add lanes forever if you think of it that way. You have to broaden your perspective and look at other.
And there's expense, right, Chris?
I mean, there's absolute expense. I mean, just in the last 5 years, we've seen construction prices for road building go, I mean, absolutely.
It's like double or even triple, isn't it? It's crazy.
It's really crazy. I mean, you're looking now at a interchange project that's $230 $5 million at 29.
And that's the I-10. 29 and I-10, the reconfiguration there to get us a little closer to something not insane. Yeah,
exactly. And and I remember taking an intern with me to the TPO meeting when that was first discussed.
The Transportation Planning Organization, exactly, where they do this stuff, roads among the three counties. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
And he was amazed as a young man exactly how much that sort of project cost. And it takes, you know, a tremendous, I mean, this is a 5-year project. They're building like 12 bridges. I mean, it's a very big project that is absolutely needed. I mean, that interchange was designed when the interstate was first put through here in the late 60s. We've absolutely grown since then.
Right.
But another approach that you can look at, instead, like Christian mentioned, instead of adding a bunch of lanes, which is extremely expensive, is using the technology that's available these days, building that technology into the traffic signals and along these big corridors by running new fiber lines through there to be able to connect sensors in the streetlights and in the traffic signals to be able to see what those flow patterns are looking like and be able to use AI and the engineering professionals around here to be able to manipulate those traffic signal timings on peak of day to be able to move more traffic. That helps the environment with less vehicular idling at the signals. Mm-hmm. It makes everything safer. It makes
people are less
calmer.
Frustrated. Their quality of life goes up because traffic flow is better.
Because you're not sitting in a car.
Yeah.
You know, for an extra 20 minutes to get home.
Being forced to listen
day.
To the radio. You know.
Exactly. And it, you know, employers have a role to play to this. You look in this. You look at what happened with the pandemic, where we allowed more people to work from home, mm-hmm. and that's now kind of an established thing. There's been some back to the office
there's some
thing.
Definitely rebound on that.
That's
yeah.
part of our society now, and that's a good thing. That keeps cars off the road. You know, the other thing you can do, especially with the big places like a Navy base or a Navy Federal or these big employers, they can stagger right when people arrive, kind of a thing. You know, and avoid because as Chris and if nothing else, you know, where are the fiscal conservatives in this? Right? I mean, it's like literally car infrastructure is the most expensive thing you ever do. So if you can get more out of what you already have by being smart, working with the employers, using the technology Chris mentioned, we get more out of what we already have. And that's a fiscal conservative solution right there.
You know, you were talking about technology, Chris. Of course, the Escambia County has been using the Advanced Traffic Management System for a while now. We're building a facility to actually house that for both counties. And, you know, that's sort of the – and it really has made a big difference. You notice it on Davis Highway. It's not great, but it's much better, except at Olive. you know, I told this to people and they did not believe me at first, but I am sure there has been a change in the traffic signal pattern at 9th Avenue and the off-ramp from 110 because I have driven down that off-ramp hundreds of times in my life, never hit the green light at 9th Avenue. I've hit it 4 or 5 times in the last 2 weeks. So I don't know if there's been a change. There has to have been a change. It can't have not been a change. But the point is that that's responding in real time to what's going on the street with the lights, with the traffic. And if there's a problem, we can readjust, right? Instead
of course.
You know, the old way is, well, we're going to set that traffic light at 23 seconds because we know that based on the average of demand, that's what it should take.
Yeah. I mean, you know, back in the day, a traffic signal controller was, you know, mechanical switches. And now, basically, you need to be an IT professional to be able to get into that cabinet, to be able to see, you know, what's going on, to do all the testing that needs to be done. And all of the signals in Escambia County are connected back to the makeshift TMC, if you will, that's in the second floor of the COC there on Fairfield Drive, which is going to be moved out to the public safety area once the Regional Traffic Management Center is constructed, and they're receiving bids for those now. So that is a reality that's going to happen. Along with that, there are two fiber optic corridors, our high crash corridors, that the Planning Council, the Emerald Coast Regional Council, was able to get grant money and some money from DOT to be able to connect a fiber backbone down Highway 29 from the interstate initially to W Street and then future down to Brent Lane to be able to complete a fiber loop so that we're not relying on cellular signals, which kind of come and go sometimes.
Right.
And then another portion is going to be Fairfield Drive, I believe, from Mobile Highway back to the office there at Park Place and Fairfield Drive to be able to, again, make that continuous redundant loop. So if something gets cut, you still have those communications back to the TMC as time goes on. So again, you know, the local areas here are through the Planning Council are really adopting technology with the signal and the traffic flow. Even on the beach, I mean, there are cameras.
Oh yeah,
all
well, that's
kind of
where
place.
It all started. Really,
well, that was
I mean, that's where I first became aware of it.
Sure.
Was the signal at Via de Luna, and that you could remotely operate that and manage traffic flow without having to have a deputy stand there.
Absolutely, and that is done every weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from basically April all the way through Labor Day. Someone is watching a series of cameras to make sure that traffic can move on and off of the beach. That's a big challenge now with more people coming onto the beach through the toll booth than ever before. When you still have 1,000 an hour coming on and you have people wanting to go home at 3 o'clock, or God forbid a thunderstorm comes and everybody goes home at the same time, it
right.
makes it kind of tough. And they're getting to a saturated level there. And Commissioner Hofberger's being very proactive to be able to look for additional solutions there.
I got a text in here. Somebody says, it sounds like your guest is speaking in cursive. I've never heard someone speak so fast but be so clear. I don't know which of you they mean, but I'll take it as a compliment. It's a compliment. Somebody else says, what was it, that drivers speed up after exiting the Pensacola Bay Bridge because they think it's an on-ramp for I-110 or I-10? I'm not sure which one they mean, but either way, yeah. The mindset of the driver, right? We always... I don't know if it comes from playing games or liking to go fast, but we all kind of get behind the wheel and I got to get there as fast as I possibly can. I mean, I know I do. My whole life I've done it that way. Maybe it's a defect of our culture. I don't know, but that's certainly the way we think about it. We'll come back to this in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
If you're at the intersection of Pine Forest and Nine Mile, we've got a vehicle accident that just happened. It's blocking both the left, the eastbound and westbound lanes on 9 miles, so just be prepared for that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
I have two different questions, and I want to talk about both of them with you, and I know we don't have time for both. So, Christian, I see bike lanes showing up everywhere. All over the place. I see new bike lanes, restricted roads. I see Palafox. I see there's an effort, right? You know, maybe it's not as aggressive as I know you would like, but there's definitely an effort. I see very few people really using them. I've been other places where I see them more. Like Greenville, South Carolina is a place where you see a lot more use of the multi-use trails and all this kind of stuff. Is it the right idea to expect that if you build it, they will bike? Or is that too optimistic? I mean, honestly, that people will really bike as an alternative to driving in the kinds of numbers you need to benefit from that.
Yeah, the places where you get far more people on bikes are places where the built environment supports that. So you go to – you and if you don't live in a place like that, we all travel to a place where – while we're there on vacation, we get around by walking, we get around by biking, because that's the easiest and most pleasant way to do it, right?
Yeah,
driving a car,
yeah.
It's too expensive, there's nowhere to put the car, right? You know, you go to Old Charleston, you go to Old Savannah, New Orleans, right? The default is walking and biking. And so the built environment—
Car driving is so unpleasant or difficult, right?
Exactly. And so those are the places where when you put that bike facility in, they really get a lot of use. When you put that bike facility out on these suburban arterials where cars are going 45 and 50, they really end up serving those people that are among the poorest and most desperate in our city. They don't have a car, and they live in those areas. They have to get to the store, they have to get to work, and typically, you know, DOT is recognizing these roadways have room for that bike lane. They're not taking away space. There's just and so that space is there, and they're just reallocating it.
And if you go with narrower lanes, you wind up accomplishing a road diet because people drive slower. Like the restriping on Pace, it was just done. Is you've created narrower lanes, which every person psychologically feels like they have to go slower because there's not as much wiggle room, and so they naturally slow down, even though you haven't planted trees or put in wiggles or chicanes or anything. Right, Chris?
Absolutely, and that was facilitated so that there could be bike lanes for people to ride if they choose to ride in the road, or, you know, many cases, they do ride on the sidewalk.
All right, so the other question I wanted to... speed tables.
You love them.
Speed tables, speed bumps, the modern version of the speed bump where it's the, you know, it's the trapezoid, right? You go up an angle, across a flat, and then down a back angle. In theory, if speed tables were made consistently and you could actually go the speed limit over the speed table safely in any car, I would probably not object to them. That is never the reality. The reality is that you slow down to 20 to safely go over them, then you speed back up to 30 or 35 or whatever it is, and it essentially winds up breaking a road that used to work fine. But for some reason, there are human beings that say they believe in them and like them, and I cannot fathom that similar human beings are in the world with me because I can't make sense of it. So, Chris, Persuade me I'm wrong.
I wish I could, because I'm not so certain that I'm not with you.
Oh, yes, yay!
Whenever speed tables are put in, speed bumps, whatever you want to call them, there is a study, there is a speed study to see just how many people are exceeding the speed limit, and there's a metric there.
Yeah.
And they're put in. They are relatively cheap.
They are.
Instead of putting a chicane in or an island, they're...
I mean, they're what, about $5,000 a piece?
They're $5,000 a piece.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're...
You got about 10 seconds.
They do exactly what you said they do. You slow down. But you speed up, and then you slow down again.
And then you... Or you get frustrated, and you take another road.
But versus putting a curve in the middle of an established road...
Christian and Chris, thank you.
Stream us at News Radio 90.